So, let's pick it up. 2 Samuel 5 and 6. When all the tribes of Israel, came to David at Hebron and said, "Behold, we are your bone and flesh. In times past, when Saul was king over us, it was you who led us out and brought in Israel. And the Lord said to you, 'You shall be shepherd of my people Israel, and you shall be prince over Israel.' So all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and the king David made a covenant with them at Hebron before the Lord, and they anointed David king over all of Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 40 years. At Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and then at Jerusalem, he reigned over all of Israel and Judah for 33 years, again, putting the nations back together again. And the king and the men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who said to David, 'You'll not come in here, but the blind and the lame will ward you off,' thinking David cannot come in here. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is the city of David, Jerusalem. And David said on that day, 'Whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him go up the water shaft to attack the lame and the blind, who are hated by David's soul. Therefore it is said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house.' And David lived in the stronghold, Jerusalem, called it the city of David. And David built the city all around from the Milo inward. And David became greater and greater, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him. And Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David and cedar trees, also carpenters and masons who built David a house. And David knew the Lord had established him king over Israel, and that he had exalted his kingdom over the sake of his people Israel. And David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he came from Hebron, and more sons and daughters were born to David. And they are the names of these who were born to him in Jerusalem: Shammuah, Shobab, Nathan, Solomon, Ebhar, Elishu, Nepheg, Jephiah, Elishama, Eliada. He's just making this up now, isn't he? When the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, and all the Philistines went up to search for David. But David heard of it, and he went down to the stronghold. Now the Philistines had come and spread out in the valley of Rephaim, and David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I go up against Philistines? Will you give them into my hand?' And the Lord said to David, 'Go up, for I will certainly give the Philistines into your hand.' And David came to Baal Perazim, and David defeated them there. And he said, 'The Lord has burst through my enemies before me like a bursting flood.' Therefore, the name of that place is called Baal Perazim. And the Philistines left their idols there, and David and his men carried them away. And then the Philistines came up yet again and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. And when David inquired of the Lord, he said, 'You shall not go up. Go around to the rear and come up against them the opposite of the balsam trees. And when you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the balsam trees, then rouse yourselves, for the Lord has gone out before you to strike down the army of the Philistines.' And David did as the Lord commanded him and struck down the Philistines from Geba to Gezer. And David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. And David arose and went with all the people who were with him, Baal Judah, to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called the name of the Lord of hosts, which sits enthroned in the cherubim." By the way, the Philistines had stolen the Ark of the Covenant, okay? So basically, I'm going back and get it. "And they carried the Ark of God on a new cart, and they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the Ark of God, and Ahio went before the Ark. And David and all the house of Israel were making merry before the Lord with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals." Oh, no, not castanets. "And when they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah put out his hand to the Ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and the God struck him down there because of his error, and he died there beside the Ark of God. And David was angry because the Lord had burst forth against Uzzah, and That place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. And David was afraid of the Lord that day. And he said, how can the ark of the Lord come to me? So David was not willing to take the ark of the Lord into the city of David. But David took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all of his household. And it was King David, and it was told to King David, hey, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the ark of the Lord had gone 6 steps, he sacrificed on ox and fattened animal. And David danced before the Lord with all of his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. So David in the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. So you follow that, guys? Every 6 steps, they stopped and sacrificed. 6 steps, stopped and sacrificed. It's a long trip. As the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord. And she despised him in her heart. They brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And when David had finished offering the burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of the hosts, distributed among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins to each one. Then all the people departed, each to his house. And David returned to bless his household. But Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, how the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servant, female servants, as one of the vulgar fellows shamelessly uncovers himself. And David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me above your father and above all his house to appoint me as a prince over Israel, the people of Israel, or the people of the Lord. And I will make merry before the Lord. And I will make myself yet more contemptible than this, and I will be abased in your eyes. But by the female servants of whom you have spoken, by them I shall be held in honor. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child to the day of her death. We'll stop right there. Now, from the time that David had killed Goliath, he essentially had led the people. Even though Saul was still king, he was still the man who led the people. Now Saul, he certainly had the badge, but God was using David mightily. 1 Samuel 18:7 says, Saul had slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. So God had chosen David even before Saul had ever been removed from the throne. When the chips were down, the people didn't go to Saul. They looked for David for defense and victory over the Philistines. 1 Samuel 18:14 says, David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. So even while David was in exile, people still came to him for justice. So he was the man long before he had the badge. And I bring that up this evening because I have to be brief, but I think that's important because it's important to understand that a leader doesn't come because you have an official title slapped on you. A leader comes because you have been faithfully doing the work of the ministry. You have been faithful in the small things, thus God has entrusted you with the larger. So being a leader means you actually have people following you and that you're worthy of being followed, that you are the example, that your life is saying, be like me. And you say, I don't want to do that. Well, then don't step into leadership. Because that's what your life is saying, even if you do not verbally say it. Paul the Apostle said that. It's a daunting responsibility. But it involves other people, because in a one-man army, everyone's the general. So now, it's important to understand that when it comes to David and the way that God had chosen him, no one self-anoints. Do you follow me when I say that? Certainly, there are plenty of people in our world today that try to do that. But really, when it comes to the things of God, no one self-anoints. No one can declare themselves a leader. Oh, we try. Those who lead declare it with their lives and with their experience. David was a king by God's divine direction. But certainly it was the people who saw that he was God's choice, that God had chosen David to lead them as a nation, and it was the people who declared them his leader, their leader. So the people gathered together, and they made, interestingly enough, they made a covenant commitment with David. This is one of the instances in which we read about this thing called a covenant commitment. Now, I don't have time to get into that tonight other than to tell you that those of you that have made such a commitment to this church, you understand what that means. We've been through it in depth. So all the elders of Israel came to the king in Hebron, and King David made a covenant with all of them before the Lord in Hebron. Now, you need to understand, we're not doing it. We're only going to do it once. But 1 and 2 Chronicles tends to be a parallel to 1 and 2 Samuel. So we're not going to go over them both. So if you looked at the parallel passage to this one, 1 Chronicles 12, 23 through 40, it says that when they anointed him king, there was a party, and that party drew 350,000 people. Now that's a bash, okay? From all the tribes, 350,000. So there was a huge celebration. I mean, this was a potluck of epic proportions for sure. Was this important? And if so, why was this bash important? It's very important for us to understand that no leadership is ever going to succeed or survive without consensus and without unity. If you all were not behind me as a pastor, then we would eventually fall apart and we would not survive as a church. This is why it's not happenstance, it's on purpose that we focus so much on community and fellowship in this church. What we do, we ultimately do together. We all take different parts, but we are desirous to push in the same direction. Oneness of mind, oneness of heart, a consensus of mission, a unity of passion. Now, despite this anointing, we're going to see two Davids as we go through 2 Samuel and beyond. Certainly, David was a stellar individual in many aspects. I mean, he was a legend. And we know that. But we also know that he made some mistakes in his life that were epic. And sometimes, as I say, they were minor splinters, but sometimes they were direct disobedience. Sometimes they were criminal behavior. And I find it interesting that God still used him. Greatly used him. Maybe that's because a perfect man does not exist except in Jesus Christ. Certainly not one that we can elect to the Supreme Court, apparently. There is no such person. Now, I tell you that this evening, not to provide you with a long leash, but it does tell us that God can and will use us even in our imperfect state, and that's just as important for us to know that tonight. So if you're sitting there going, well, God can never use me, I got too much baggage, I got too much past, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, you need to look into Scripture and see who it is that God used. I mean, I could just run down the gamut. From Abraham to Moses, striking the rock twice. Noah, what's the first thing you do when he gets out of the boat? Got drunk. David was a murderer. Paul the apostle used to kill Christians, put them in jail. I mean, and the list goes on and on and on. Even the great Elijah, oh, you know, there's no one left, it's just me. So he's in a cave whining all the way down the line. It's called grace. It's very, very important for you to understand that, because without it, none of us in this room will ever serve God. According to verse 13, David began to multiply wives and women in his lives, and I mentioned that already. Despite God's express direction not to do that. Deuteronomy 17:17, if you keep in track. However, one thing we see in David again, he was a lifelong warrior, but still there was an air of humility in him. I don't think anyone would argue that David was a man's man, but he still knew who ultimately was in charge. Gentlemen, that's your key. He had the ability to see his error, to see his sin, and if you see, he had one important trait that's critical to the success of our lives and any ministry we might have, and that is we need to learn and to know how to repent. The lack of that trait will definitely keep you out of blessing and will definitely keep you out of leadership. So we see the humility in action as David approached God for authority here and direction. He was going to go to the battle with the Philistines, and we see immediately, how did he approach it? I mean, here he's a warrior. He didn't go, let's get it on, man. I killed the giant Goliath, you know. He didn't do that. That's not how he started. Despite all of his experience on the battlefield, he still felt he needed God, and indeed he did. So he knew God was an expert. And it's something that we need to learn always. God is better at everything, better than you. I don't care what your specialty is. He's better. He can do it better. And he knew he wanted God's blessing, and so he would not move without seeking God specifically on every matter before him. So now the battle of the Philistines, he went out there and seemingly won it easily the first time. And then I think it would have been quite easy for him to, the second time the Philistines came, he just went out there and attempted to replicate that victory. And certainly I know what that's like, you know. You get a pattern going. And so it would have been easy for him just to go out and do what he did the first time when the second time rolled around. But there's a spiritual lesson here for us, gang. And that's that God sometimes allows us to be tempted to take control of a situation, even when it appears to be the exact scenario that we already won before. Satan loves to use presumption to cause us to fall. I got this, God. I got this, God. So God understands all the nuances of the battle before us and will forever desire that you seek him, even if you think the answer is obvious. I found out in all the years of ministry that it's not always as obvious as it maybe appeared on the surface. And so how oftentimes we will plow through an issue without really seeking God. We make decisions according to our wants and our desires and our passions. Oftentimes we attempt to mask what we're doing with the facade of doing ministry. We make the obvious choice instead of necessarily God's choice. We think that we know God and what he would want in this matter, so we don't really ask. Perhaps we don't really want to know the answer. So in chapter 6, running along here, we see a side or an act of God is now is going to reflect what I just said to you. And that is that the way he acts is not always the way we think. Chapter 6 of this book can certainly easily upset many of us, perhaps make us cry foul. David now went out to retrieve the Ark of the Covenant. He's simply going to bring it home to its rightful place. This should have been a no-brainer. At least he thought that. You know, of course God would want us to do this. Of course God would want the ark to be here. This is easy. I have got this. And you know what? Things didn't go the way he thought it would go. Now, the Ark, you have to understand, for those of you that aren't familiar with the Ark of the Covenant, it was at that time, at least symbolically, the place of residence of God. This is where God lived, in the Ark of the Covenant. It's God's house. And God had left, if you're tedious enough to go back and read it all, God had left some pretty explicit instructions with Israel on how they were to deal with the Ark and how to handle it. Very specific. And an error in that instruction cost Uzzah his life. Now we might be able to sit back and go, that's just not fair. I don't understand that. I mean, this man was trying to do the right thing, just simply trying to steady the Ark and not let it fall down. So he reached up to steady the Ark, and because he touched it, God struck him dead. Now, we live in a generation tonight that seems to think that God bends, if you will, for every new social and cultural change that comes down the pike. And you can, in light of that, especially if you're young today and you see God as forever changing, this can be quite shocking aspect about God. But if you get anything out of that event, get this. God is quite serious about his directions. He is not messing around. And he's already told us plainly that he never changes. Uzzah, you see, he did the right thing, but he did it with the wrong reasons. He thought God needed him to do something. He thought God needed him to do something when God was and is more concerned with Uzzah being something, not doing something. Whenever you start to feel like that this thing over here, if I don't do it, well, the world's just going to collapse. I have to go do this. You are stepping out of the realm of God. God don't need you. God could send 10,000 angels. There's a thought that he needed to save the day, and that was a fatal error. Worldly logic does not always reign supreme when it comes to spiritual matters. What God told you to do is far more important than what you want to do or what seems like the right thing to do to you. So lastly, we come to a close here tonight. We see that David, in his humility, he eventually did bring the ark home to roost. He did so carefully, ever so carefully, and with great respect. And the party still went on, notice, and I think that's cool. The party still went on, but within the sphere of God's directions and with great reverence and holiness. So apparently, David knew how to worship. I mean, he was a guy who got into it. Do you know people like that? Remember, our lives and our obedience is our greatest expression of worship. You with me? Our lives and our obedience to what God has directed us to do, whether we understand it or not, is our greatest form of worship that we can offer him. How God must rejoice in our worship. I think many of us come to these times of worship with lethargic and a dispassionate mind. When we worship here, we are entering into the presence of the Creator of the universe. I would hope that would always be an incredible and daunting situation. Now, what's sad here is David's wife is a little embarrassed by her husband's zeal. And Michal was more concerned with decorum, with public opinion, than her standing before God. And I think a lot of folks are that way today, and maybe you're that way today. I don't know why you'd go to this church. Not going to get any public badges by going here. There's a lot of people who want to tone down their faith so people don't think that they're too radical or think that they're too overtly zealous. I mean, who wants to be thought crazy, right? Well, apparently, Paul, who wrote in 2 Corinthians 5:13, "If we are out of our mind, it is for God." Amen. So Michal's slight in this, it cost her dearly. It broke off her relationship with her husband, for one thing. And David, interestingly enough, chose the way of God over prestige, over position, over title. He even did so over his wife. That's rarity. I wish I could tell you how I've lost count how many men have stood in my office and could not get their marriage and life under control with their spouse and saying things like, "Well, I don't think God would, you know, want my wife to leave me, and she'll leave me if I do that. So you're going to sin every day of your life so that won't happen." Is that what you're saying? Yeah. And off they go down the road. Lots of people out there that are not willing to be David's. David did not choose family first. So point that out. He chose God first. He made the right choice, and certainly many would disagree with him. I'll leave you with this verse, or this passage out of Joshua 24. It says, "So revere Jehovah and serve him in sincerity and truth. Put away forever the idols your ancestors worshipped when they lived beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt. Worship the Lord alone. But if you are unwilling to obey the Lord, then decide today whom you will obey. Will it be the gods of your ancestors beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites here in this land? But as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord."